Projects and Operations Subcommittee meeting, August 6, 2019, 6:30 p.m. A copy of the Open Meetings Act and Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back door of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Chad?
Here.
Sapinski?
Here.
Teaser?
Here.
Chairperson?
Hi. Item number four, we have adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Aye. Item number five is proof of publication. I have proof of publication of tonight's meeting and will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, informational report from Nebraska Rural Water Association on Lakeland Connection Project Financial Managerial Water System Assessment. Zach Nelson and Kim Halverson, NE Rural Water Association.
Good evening. If you all remember at the March meeting, we had a brief discussion and Kim presented information on an assessment we did of the Washington County Rural Water System and the health of the system in regards to the Lakeland Connection Project. This is a follow-up assessment to that assessment. Pretty much since then, over the last few months, the system has kind of operated as as usual. Things have gone well. In fact, we finished the year cash positive. So Ken has a follow-up assessment that he'll pass out, and pretty much most of the information on there is exactly what you saw back in March.
Good evening. I'm Ken Alders, Nebraska Rural Water. And Zach said this is a follow-up assessment.
He'll be here late.
Right over here?
I don't know about that.
And as you know, when you borrow money, why, there's always paperwork involved. And
thanks.
Same way with this loan. There had to be an initial assessment to see if the system had the financial and managerial capacity to pay back the loan. Anyway, I presented the initial one a while back, and then I met with Zach. And we did the follow-up assessment. And that is to see if the money was well spent and the project did what it was supposed to. Well, obviously it did. And if you look on here, it's got red and green. And the red were the answers to the initial assessment. And the green are the questions that Zach and I answered follow-up assessment. And for the most part, you can look through there, and they're all pretty much the same, except
Mr. Allison, you don't have to stand. You can have a seat if you like.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyhow, there's really no issues with that loan, and unless you have some questions for me, all I need is someone to sign one of these, and I'll
get out of your hair. Is that the end of the presentation?
It is.
Okay.
Yep. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Did I get promoted to mayor? Or is there a
water system representative? So I can sign it. You can sign it.
So who would want to sign
Zach? I can sign
the water system.
Oh, you sign. Okay. Yep. If you look at this over after all, have any questions, why? Zach can get a hold of me, and sure, we'll get them to you. So,
thank you very much.
You bet.
Can we have a motion on this?
It's just information.
You don't need to
produce information.
Anyone else here wish to speak to this item?
I have one question, though. Right. Jack, if you're a new person wanting to get onto the water system in Washington County, what's it called?
So the standard hookup fee is $3,500, and that's under the assumption that we have a water main right in front of your property. That covers us tapping the water main and installing the pit on the edge of the property. But let's say, for instance, if you're like a half mile or mile away, whatever the cost is to extend a water main to get to that person's property, that's what that cost of connection is. Correct.
You live right in Lakeland, you only have to go...
That's correct. Yep.
Any other directive? Thank you very much. Item number 7, update on the 2018 USGS groundwater quality monitoring, Paul Wooder and Amanda Flynn, U.S. Geological Survey.
Okay, good evening. Amanda's going to walk us through most of this. It's a review of water quality results from last year and what we're doing this year. So I think just go forward and back on that.
My name is Amanda Flynn. I'm a physical scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, and I'm going to discuss what we did in 2018 and the plans for 2019. So we got a few new members of the board since I was here last. So we're going to go through a quick background on the project again. So it'll be old hat for some people. And then we'll go into what we did in 2018 and the results, specifically focusing on nitrate, arsenic, manganese, and pesticides. Then we'll go into the 2019 plan and discuss where you can find publications and available data. So for the background, the USGS and the district entered into an agreement in 92 to determine the water quality of the aquifers within the district. Monitoring has continued since then to support the district's groundwater management plan, and the monitoring focuses on contaminants that have been detected at 30% or greater of the maximum contaminant levels set by Nebraska Title 118. We also collect samples to monitor for additional pesticides and nutrients. We collect samples of two different types of wells. The first type of wells we call our network wells. They are privately owned domestic irrigation stock or municipal wells. These wells are sampled on a four-year rotation focusing on one specific aquifer a year. The second type of well that we collect at is a cluster well. These are entity-owned wells, and they are multiple wells at one site. Each well is screened in a differing depth of the aquifer. So the upper right picture is a picture of the Valley Well cluster. We got three wells in that area, and then the bottom schematic is very generalized idea of how we have wells screened in differing depths. So you can see the gray on there is actually supposed to be the screen. And you can imagine some of these wells started only going down 40 feet, and some of the deeper wells can go down a couple hundred feet. So we really do collect water at differing elevations of the aquifer. The clustered wells are sampled at a minimum of every 2 years to support the Department of Environment and Energy's groundwater monitoring assessment, and that is provided annually to the Nebraska Legislature. And in case you didn't know, the DEE, Department of Environmental and Energy, is formerly the DEQ. So they changed their name recently. So there are four aquifers within the district. This figure shows the aquifers and the location of all the NRD-owned monitoring wells. The red is the Missouri Alluvial Aquifer along the Missouri River. The blue along the center of the area is the Upland Alluvial Aquifer. And then the purple down here is the Elkhorn and Platte Aquifer. And then the kind of dotted in area is the Dakota Aquifer, which is present at depth along most of the area. The yellow areas are where the Dakota Aquifer would actually be close to the surface, where the other aquifers have eroded away. In 2018, the aquifer of interest was the Missouri Aquifer, and in 2019, we're focusing on the Platte and Elkhorn Aquifer. In the past few years, we've also been assessing aquifer age in the monitoring wells. This is helping us understand recharge in specific areas and to identify areas that may be vulnerable to actions on the surface. Age has been estimated a majority of the monitoring wells, with the youngest water being approximately 25 years old in the shallow Takama well, and the oldest water is over 5,000 years old in the Jackson Deep well. Age is determined by various tracers, including C14, tritium, and chlorofluorocarbons. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have at that. Either we can do it later or by email if you have any questions. We're going to jump into the 2018 result discussion now. We collected 50 samples at network and cluster well sites. We went to 11 cluster well sites this year between all of our different sampling, and collected water at 13 private wells. We collected samples for major ions, trace elements, and nutrients. Three wells were sampled for an in-depth pesticide suites, and there were no detections in these pesticides this year. So starting with nitrates in the network wells, these are the privately owned wells. We had few low detections of nitrates, but a majority of the wells showed no detections. And now going into the cluster wells, we're actually going to start showing our figures based on if they're the shallow, medium, or deep well depth. So this is nitrates in our shallow wells in the cluster wells. We actually show the results range from no and low detections in a majority of the wells. And then we have a high detection at Takama Shallow, and that's above 10 milligrams per liter. And we go into our medium depth, we have low or no detections in a majority of the wells, and then we had a medium detection, which was between 5 and 10 milligrams per liter at Springfield, which is 144th and Buffalo Road, and then again at the Takama medium cluster. And then moving on to our deep cluster wells, we had low or no detections in all of them except for Springfield deep, which had detection above 10 milligrams per liter. So we're going to look at a quick chart of what's going on in Springfield. There's been a steady increase of nitrates over this time at Springfield since the well has been installed. The shallow well is undergoing denitrification, which is why the nitrate levels have not exceeded 5 milligrams per liter. The medium and deep wells are not undergoing denitrification, and this year is the first year the deep wells exceeded 10 milligrams per liter. And then you can also see that the medium well is very close to exceeding. Okay, everything's good. I just put an extra data point in there. I apologize. Okay, and then if we look at the Takama well cluster, you can see the shallow well has had high nitrates since the cluster was installed, but over the past 5 years, the trend has slowly been decreasing. The medium well has been influenced by the pumping of the other wells in the area and sometimes pulls nitrates into the shallow well. So that's why the medium well can sometimes spike. And then the deep well has had lower nitrates since it was installed and is showing the same trend. Moving on to arsenic, these are the arsenic results for the network wells. The maximum contaminant level for arsenic in drinking water is 10 micrograms per liter. A majority of the wells had no or low-level detections, and few wells were between 5 and 10 micrograms per liter, and those are, I went way far ahead on that. Apologize. So these kind of mustard-looking ones are between 5 and 10 milligrams per liter, and then our reds are above 10 milligrams per liter of arsenic. Arsenic is more prevalent in the shallow wells, but it can still be found as we go deeper. So in the medium depth wells, the arsenic drops below 5 milligrams per liter in all of the wells. And then when we go on to the deep wells, we did have one detection of between 5 and 10 milligrams per liter at Valley. And we have seen this similar result in the past at this well, and it's likely indicates ionic exchange mobilizing arsenic in the water at that depth. And we're going to move on to manganese, and iron and manganese, I'm not going to show any iron graphs, but we'll say iron and manganese kind of follow the same thing. So we're going to show manganese, and just keep in mind that iron follows the same pattern as the manganese. The manganese are iron and manganese are common hard water minerals in the aquifers in the district, but especially so in the Missouri aquifer. We usually see our highest levels of iron and manganese in the Missouri aquifer. The MCL for both iron and manganese is set just for aesthetic purposes, not for health purposes. For manganese, the limit is 50 micrograms per liter. For the network wells, all but two wells are above the maximum contaminant level for manganese. For the cluster wells, manganese in general is greatest in the shallow wells. The Takama shallow well had a result of less than 50 micrograms per liter, but the rest of the wells were above 50 micrograms per liter. And then in the medium wells, Takama and Springfield at Buffalo Road were also below 50 micrograms per liter, but again, the rest were above 50 micrograms per liter. And then in the deep wells, the concentrations drop slightly again, with the exception of the Takama and Valley cluster, where the manganese is also again being mobilized due to chemical reactions in the water column. As stated before, iron follows a similar pattern. It's high in many areas across the aquifer, and the results are consistent as to what has been seen in previous sampling events. Moving on to the 2019 sampling plan, the aquifer of interest for the network wells is the Platte and Elkhorn alluvial aquifers. Sampling is to occur in September of this year. We usually like to do sampling prior to September, but due to flooding and work that has come up with the USGS side of things, sampling got pushed back a little bit. We'll be also collecting samples at Elkhorn Crossing, Venice, Springfield, Valley, and Ashland as part of the specific aquifer sampling. We'll be collecting samples at Takema, Homer, Arlington Medium and Deep, Jackson, Decatur Deep, Winnebago, and West Sarpy to support the DEE groundwater monitoring plan. And this year also kicks off the contaminants of emerging concern study. The cluster well sites are going to be sampled for pharmaceutical and agricultural hormones to determine a baseline for these contaminants within the district. The focus will be on shallow and some medium wells across the district. It's a long list, but it's Venice, Ashland, Springfield at Buffalo Road, Elkhorn Crossing, Takema, Arlington, Decatur, Valley, and Springfield at Fairview. The first round of pharmaceuticals and hormone sampling was completed in June. The results from June are still being processed, but preliminary results have been released for 9 of the wells. Each well is being analyzed for 134 different contaminants. Only 8 detections have been noted at 7 wells. These detections include antibiotics and low levels of atrazine. So atrazine is being detected at even lower limits than what we usually look for. The second and final round of sampling will take place in October of this year. Okay, so if you want to find results for all this information, you can find it on the project website through the USGS website web pages. Information can also be found in the UNL Agrochemical Clearinghouse database. Results through 2009 can be found summarized in a USGS scientific investigations report, and the results can also be found in the Nebraska Quality Monitoring Report.
Just to wrap up to what we do with this data then in terms of our groundwater management plan and our phases is to take some of those samples in and look at how things might have changed over a year ago when we updated this for our groundwater management plan. That's when we adopted our new plan and our new rules and all that regs and stuff. So really, if you look at what happened here, there's not a lot of change going on. Basically, those that are phase two areas, which means they're above a 50% of the samples have reached a certain limit. Those will stay in a phase two. Those that were not in a phase two will remain in a phase one. So just to note, there's no change based on the water quality results we saw this year. Any questions?
Are you finished?
Yep.
Okay. Is anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this item? I'm hearing directors. Director Teaser.
So, what you're saying is the 5,000-year-old water isn't like fine wine. It's not better than the.
Not necessarily. It has a lot of mineralization in it because it has a lot of time to absorb.
I did have a question though. Seriously, on I was recently asked. The cluster valley, what are the depths of the three wells?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can definitely email
you. Can you get that for me?
Yes, definitely. Yep.
Thank you. They're right. I think they're right around, we'll make for sure, but they're 40 feet, and then there's one at, I think, around 90, which is about the bottom of the sands and gravels of the Platte, and then the other one's about 180 to 190. It went through the Dakota, where we found some sand and gravel in the Dakota, and that's where that lowest well is. So the top two are, I know, are in the Platte alluvium.
40, 80 and 190 is?
Yeah, 40, 90, and 190, basically, roughly.
So you're monitoring the nitrates, arsenic, and pharmaceuticals. Let's say those numbers, like, get up to real high. Mm-hmm. Then what happens? What plan of action do we take now? Both here or what?
I mean, based on our groundwater management plan, we continue to see those samples from a different region. If they did exceed continue to see 50% of those samples exceed the different levels of the maximum contaminant level. So in case of arsenic, it was 10 micrograms per liter. We saw an increasing trend where more of those showed up over 5 milligrams per liter. We would need to look at what actions could we take as far as putting it into another a phase 2 or phase 3, but then also what actions can we take to do that?
Well, it's a, do you find the farmer who's putting in too much fertilizer? Do you find the person dumping the pharmaceuticals in the river?
But with
practical sense,
I guess we know more when we do the nitrate stuff that we've tended to go out and do plans or implementation that work on farmers with fertilizer and other things. If it's a contaminant that's outside of land use practices and things like that, we need to figure out.
Naturally occurring, arsenic, for example?
Or let's say it was better ways of protecting people from, let's say they're not using that as their drinking water, what else are we going to provide them drinking water?
Right. So arsenic is naturally occurring in this environment. And so there's not, that would have to likely fall into personal remediation in that situation.
Caution.
Some sort of in-home treatment.
Right.
Thanks.
You have the questions?
I had a real brief one. You mentioned a 20-year-old aquifer up by Takema. How do you know that?
So for the Takema wells, we use chlorofluorocarbons for that specific well. And so that is like your refrigerants and everything that get put into the atmosphere. We know that those started being used at a certain time period. And so then we can measure that in the groundwater, and with the amounts available in the groundwater can kind of determine how long ago that water entered into the groundwater system. From the atmosphere, from rain percolating down. Yeah. Well, I'm not as familiar with surface water, but I don't think that would be something where you could have like a surface water impact necessarily. I think that I want to say the gases would be released faster in surface water than in groundwater.
Seeing you, Lou, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 8, review and recommendation of the Platte River Trail NDOT Environmental / NEPA Professional Service Agreement with HDR, Eric Williams and Lisa Richardson, HDR.
Good evening, everyone. We have looked at this project a couple times over the last several months, initially with the programmatic agreement with NDOT to begin the project. We then made recommendations on consultants for two halves of the scope of services. We did the design consultant contract last month, and that was with Schemmer. And then the second contract is here tonight, and that's with HDR for the NEPA services. If we have the map on this item, you can see that the project is primarily the trail, the bridge over the Platte River. At each end, the bridge will extend down from being on the piers of the roadway bridge, and there will be a separate abutment at the banks. And so a vast majority of the scope of the environmental investigation here will be to make sure that the abutments on the end of the trail bridge do not have significant impacts at the edge of the Platte River. There'll be some investigation along the side of Highway 3475 up to Allied Road, but the scope should be pretty straightforward. As a federal aid project, we do need to go all the way through all of the steps of the federal aid environmental review, and so that does mean a full 404 with all of the components that go with that. And so we asked NDOT to begin negotiations with HDR for the environmental scope. They have provided back the contract documents, very similar to what they provided for Schemmer. The attachments that you have include the three relevant portions, which is the summary of the scope that HDR will complete, and then the fee breakdown, and the schedule, and that does follow the schedule for the design of the trail. So HDR would work closely with Schemmer on getting the environmental review coordinated so that the design can move forward. We have done full NEPA evaluations on other projects, most recently the completed NEPA with the Western Douglas County Trail. And so the scope and fee matched what both NDOT and district staff feels appropriate for the tests that will be completed for this project. And so the recommendation is to authorize the general manager to execute the contract for for the NEPA services with HDR. And then shortly after this, since both contracts will be signed, we would begin the work with the kickoff between the district, HDR, and Schemmer to start the design portion of this this trail. As a reminder, this is a federal aid project, so 80% of the funding for the entire project comes from federal aid through the Nebraska Department of Transportation. Of the remaining 20%, the PAPIO, Missouri River NRD, is covering 10%, and five other partners, Lower Platte South, the cities, and the counties, will cover the other 10%. So we are paying for 10% of the total cost of this project, and so 10% of the total cost here would come from the NRD, and we would pay, I believe, half of the local share when we begin the project after these two documents, these two contracts are finalized. So there would be some outlay, but we budgeted for that in this fiscal year. So we would be ready to begin the design process to keep us on schedule for letting at the end of 2021.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Do we need a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Sosinski?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 9, review and recommendation of West Douglas County Trail Amendment to the Professional Service Agreement with Earhart Griffin and Associates. Eric Ezia.
So the item we just reviewed was to begin a new federal aid project. This one we hope will be the nearly the very end of a federal aid project that has been going on for quite a while. We have been in the right-of-way negotiation phase of the Western Douglas County Trail project, and NDOT has been handling that right-of-way negotiation. We had previously submitted plans for review to Union Pacific Railroad, and if you have the map on this one, Bill, be the next page. There you are. You can see that, again, this trail connects from the schools on the left side across the Union Pacific Railroad and what's listed as should be East Reichmuth Road and over to the YMCA. We had submitted plans for review from UP previously. We had received a couple comments. Changes were made. After we got to the right-of-way review process, NDOT redistributed plans to Union Pacific. And Union Pacific indicated an additional comment that they would like additional spacing on the outside of their existing track to allow for a potential future access road. That would trigger the need for the pier of the bridge to be farther away from the edge of the railroad track than was previously indicated. This is in addition to the crash barrier and the fence that they had requested about 2 years ago during the design review. This is unfortunate because it does trigger a significant amount of redesign on the bridge, but the entire expanse of the area that the bridge spans is owned by Union Pacific. There is an unusual agreement where UP has leased the land back to the state for the road, and UP owns the entire distance. Normally, if this project were beginning new, UP would indicate that they would want the bridge to span the entire right-of-way, which is another 200 or 250 feet. That would be extremely challenging. There are no 450-foot single-span trail bridges around here. So they indicated that they would, despite their updated policy, they would still allow the pier in the right-of-way, but they want the pier moved to allow for the potential future access road outside of a potential future railroad track. UP owns the land, and NDOT does not feel that there is any additional room for negotiation, that their comment was not so much a comment as instruction that we will move the pier or we will not have the right-of-way necessary to complete the project. And so NDOT and district staff feel that we have no choice but to recommend a change to allow for design on the bridge to move the location of the pier per UP's comments. Again, we have already had discussion with UP on this in the past at something like the 60% plan timeline. It's very unfortunate that they have come back after 90% plans during the right-of-way negotiation to ask for such a substantial design change. In talking with NDOT's team, they have conveyed that if we proceed with this consultant work order or design change order, that UP will sign the right-of-way pending the final design being submitted. And that is a significant area of concern because the number of times that we have been asked to modify the plans to meet restrictions that are outside of the district's control has been significant. And so at this point, NDOT right-of-way has verbally assured us that if we proceed with this CWO and the changes are made to the bridge, the UP will sign the right-of-way. And I received one of the other right-of-way parcels in the mail yesterday. So we should expect that the right-of-way, by the time this is done, will be finalized. And the letting will be moved from the previously indicated October date to probably January. But that will depend on the design timeline on the bridge. So this is another change that is outside of district control, but NDOT and staff feel that there is no alternative to complete the project other than to make the change to the bridge in order to meet the comment that we've received. The motion is somewhat different than the last motion, even though it's a similar process. We have received the consultant work order, which is essentially the design change order, and the breakdown, and those are the next two pages that you have. We have not currently received the complete blue packet, which is the complete supplement to the contract and the resolution that the board approves. This is the resolution from a year and a half ago on a separate change. It is extremely similar to the resolution which we just recommended for Thursday on the past project, but we don't have that document now. So the motion tonight is to recommend that we approve a resolution which is prepared by NDOT when we receive it. We expect to receive it probably sometime next week after we send them the completed CWO. This avoids the need for reapproval once for the CWO and again for the resolution or contract documents. But essentially the numbers from the CWO which you have in front of you will be put into a much longer document in blue covers and sent back to us. And so we are asking to authorize that the general manager would approve that we would indicate the resolution has been approved and that the general manager could execute that supplemental agreement upon receipt without additional review and approval by the board. And we did this once previously to expedite our process to avoid an additional month of delay. So it is somewhat different than other federal aid motions and resolutions.
So we don't really have anything to approve tonight then?
We are asking for the recommendation is for a motion to...
Right,
and it says... to adopt the resolution provided by NDOT. That means that we will still receive the resolution. It is not part of the documentation tonight, but we will receive it after we send back the signed CWO, the change order documentation. But we are asking for that approval now, and it would indicate this same not to exceed dollar amount as an amendment to the existing contract with EGA.
That's what we would approve right there. Okay.
Yes. Okay. And there would not be additional approval, and this expedites the process on our side.
Dollar amount stays the same regardless.
Correct.
Are you finished?
That's it?
Not too confused. Let's go right ahead.
I hope that all parts of this project will soon be finished.
Thanks, Eric. Is there anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Is there a motion on the floor?
Not yet.
I'll move it.
Second.
Directors. Director Teza, then Director Jeff.
Did UP waive their requirement to put a chain link fence on Richmond?
No, that is still part of the plans.
On the north side of the road or the south side of the road?
On the map, the upper right portion is the north and east side, and there, since that is the edge of their right-of-way, their standard policy is to have the fence from the public access set at the edge of their property line. So that does mean that the fence is between the abutment for the bridge and the road, but not between the road and the railroad tracks.
So they can drive his bike down the road and being linked out of getting to the YMCA.
That is correct. If you were on the road, you would be able to access.
That's really brilliant.
You would be able to access the turn tracks. And again, I believe it's because it's the edge of their right of way.
I understand that it's on through.
We expressed that to them a few times. I'm sorry, that is still part of it.
Director Jett?
The $44,000, is that entirely our?
No, this is part of the total cost of the project, and this is also an 80-20 breakdown. The total cost will include an updated cost estimate from EGA with the new bridge design. So there is an allocation, an earmark was how this project started. And so we expect that this is still within the total allocation for the project. And so essentially we are paying some portion of this, but this was part of what we expected as the total cost of the project. I'm sorry?
Significant cost share will occur here.
Yeah, 80% of the total cost will come from federal aid funds.
But
where is the earmark estimate at, and how far are you into this, and what was the previous estimate? I know they have to revise it.
Yep, so the total dollar amount, I think, was something like $5 million, and the total contract...
The entire trail, not just the structure. Yep. Structure being a significant portion.
That's right. And so the total allocation for the entire project design and construction, both the bridge and the trail, was about $5 million. Design costs are somewhere around $500,000 right now. And so with the updated construction cost, that will put us, you know... closer to that total, but we do still expect the last cost estimate that we had prior to this change did indicate that we would still be under the total allocation.
I heard a couple things that you would have an MDOR proposal based on a pending review, and then I think you said later that it was that UP will sign it. Which is it?
We have asked MDOT, if we approve this and we make these design changes, at the end, those plans are still technically subject to their review. MDOT told us on a phone call last week that if we make these changes, UP has said that they will sign the right-of-way. Now, until they actually sign it, it is still technically subject to their review. But by making this change, if they did not sign it, we would have... I'm not sure what we would do there. I mean, it would be acting in very bad faith to say
we will sign it. You might want to abandon the project at that point, if not now.
That would be a possibility because the number of remaining options for completing this project would be very limited, and that would be a bad consequence for everyone all around. So we are taking them at their word from UP to NDOT's right-of-way team to the district that making these changes, and DOT's right-of-way team will say, okay, UP, we have met your conditions, sign the right-of-way documentation.
Thank you.
Any questions? Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Beezer?
Yes.
Chairman?
All right. Thank you very much. Item number 10, review and recommendation of application for hazard mitigation grant program floodplain buyouts, Amanda Grant.
I noticed your memos are from Lori Laster, and I'm presenting, but Lori really did all of the work to get these buyouts applications to this point, and it was a lot of work, so she definitely should have the credit for that, and also that may be why I don't have all the answers. However, Mary Baker, very qualified from JEO, has been working with Lori to get all of this data collected and into a format that we can discuss tonight. So with that, buyouts for the district have been a really successful program that we've used to get rid of flood risk in our area. And there's a lot of information about how much that saves the district, and that can be from emergency calls and emergency time evacuations, from flood insurance, a whole number of things. But the bottom line is that the districts has been doing buyouts for a long time, and we've spent $14 million, but the district portion of that was only $1.2 million, which means we've had a lot of federal money coming into those buyout programs and a lot of cost shares with other entities to help make that happen. The estimated benefits of all the buyouts in the district over all the years is over $99 million. So just kind of some numbers to think about. It's a good way to eliminate flood risk and save some costs. So the way we have this set up tonight, of course, you guys know March flooding was just awful and very devastating. And areas that have historically flooded, of course, flooded terribly, and then new places. And so Lori really had the foresight to put together, some lists of people calling about buyouts and what kind of programs that we would have early on So that's just been developing ever since March and the floods at that time. And because it was such a huge disaster in the state, they are expediting the grant program. And it's the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. We used that same grant years ago after the 2011 flood on the Missouri River. We used that same program to buy out 21 properties at Elbow Bend and Iski Place, if you remember that. And that was very successful. Heard from a number of those people that they were very happy that they were not there any longer after this year. But so we've used that before, and it's kind of cumbersome. Mary was at the state at the time and helped us navigate that and got us every dollar that we could. So she's now at JEO, and so we've enlisted her help again and for these applications should you approve them. But we had so many people. We've had some meetings with a number of entities that we broke this up into three different actions for your consideration tonight. So we'll talk about the first one, which is the biggest first, and that's the buyouts in Douglas County. I skipped through the expedited process. It took a long time last time. The way it worked this time is they wanted everyone to submit your intent on a grant project that you had, and the state was going to let us know by the end of July if we had been chosen to be on this expedited process, but then all the flooding in Kearney, and that happened, and they have not been able to get back to us. So we still believe that we'll be chosen as a project, but we need to hear from them. If we hear from them, we're selected. We're supposed to submit a full application by the end of August, so it's a little weird. We haven't heard from them yet, and it may drag a little longer, but they're really trying to get that moving so that you can do some buyouts in a reasonable time where people can make a decision and not be waiting for 3 to 5 years. So the first one for consideration is Douglas County. And Bill, we have Douglas County. So there's that one we'll need in a minute, the King Lake map. That one first. So one of the, obviously, the hardest hit areas in Douglas County was King Lake, and I don't know for sure, but the numbers I heard was somewhere around 90% of those homes in the King Lake area were beyond being repaired. The entire area is either in the floodplain or the floodway, and there's, I don't know the number of houses, several hundred at least. The purple dots are properties that we have purchased already over the years. We've had a number of programs in the King Lake area where we've made offers to do buyouts. And in fact, after 2000, I think it was the 10 flooding, we had a grant, and we had about 42 properties that had indicated interest, but we ended up only buying about 6 or 7, I think, out of that. Because the way the program works is it's all entirely voluntary. It is based on, for the most part, the pre-flood value of the structure. We get appraisals. We make an offer based on a market value of the pre-flood value. And people have the opportunity to back out all the way until the closing. So they can sign up as the application that they're interested, and we can work with them all the way through the price. The board approves a purchase agreement if it moves forward. And up until that point, the individual has the option to back out of that. So the purple are the properties that we have already purchased that we are maintaining out at King Lake, and they're pretty sporadic through there. And then the blue are the ones that would be included in the application, and there's 40 of those properties. The memo, there's 45, so we'll look at another map that have the other 5 locations. But these are the 40 at King Lake, and this is all the people that have expressed interest. So then these are maybe a little harder to see, but there's 5 additional properties that are outside of King Lake, but that were in Douglas County. There's one in Washington County, but we didn't really have a home for it, so we put it in this application. So there's 5 other properties that were interested. This one up here in Washington County, it's kind of an anomaly. It's the county was not interested in pursuing a buyout. This person really wants us to consider it, and they are near Boyer Chute, and they feel that they can maybe convince Fish and Wildlife to take permanent ownership. We wouldn't want to maintain one parcel way up here. So I don't know that that will be something that actually happens, and the board will certainly be able to discuss that if the purchase agreement were to come forward. But we did want to at least give the gentleman the opportunity to put it in the application. There's also a couple of properties by the Elkhorn. Here they are. There's a blow up. It's right here. A couple of properties right on the Elkhorn that were damaged. And there's one also on the Elkhorn there, right off of Center Street. Oh, and then there's. Oh, and then we have the fifth one is right adjacent to our Waterloo Maple River access. And the gentleman that contacted us about the potential of a buyout, we did want to give him the opportunity as well. However, he has not returned the forms and may not be interested anymore. But that would be the 45 properties included in this grant. So just to give you an idea of the kind of dollars we're talking about, the memo has some numbers in it. Now, the total buyout would be about $5.6 million, and federal funds cover 75% of that, so the district amount could be $1.4 million. Now, those are estimates for sure. We offer market value based on appraisals, and we have to demolish the houses. We have asbestos surveys. A number of items that we have to do, so we just kind of took some average numbers and put that together so that we could have a number to look at. Those numbers are probably high. Not everyone's going to want to make a deal. I will say the flooding was much worse this time than it has been in the past, so we'll have probably higher numbers than we have in the past, I would think. But anyway, to give you an idea, that's how the Douglas County application would be set up there. This 25% local share would be the way it's set up right now. And our resolution is asking you to allow the general manager to execute the application for the funding. But as it sits right now, there is no one to split the local share with. The City of Omaha and Douglas County, we've approached them in the past about buyouts at King Lake, and they have not been interested. We certainly will do it again, and there's a potential that they could help, but just want you to know that that's the way it looks as of right now. Mary and I would be happy to take any questions if you want to on the Douglas County, and then we have a couple of
others. That's a separate motion, correct?
Right.
We have a motion.
Is that River West, that one property you were just talking about, is the log cabin down?
It is.
You know, folks, this is a rather, King Lake's a rather depressed area. Do not have a lot of money. They live there because basically that's all they can afford. And they've been hit with the 2011 and then 2019 flood. I represent that area, and I certainly think it's probably money well spent. 45 homes divided by this
Rich,
five.
You gonna make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
We have a second. I know you're going to
move.
First, hear from the public. If there's anyone from the public who wish to speak to the item, I didn't. Directors, do you want to finish, Rich?
Right. That's averaging $125,000 a house. So, you know.
It's high, but we had to do something.
And that'll include all the fees and demolition and everything as well.
Oh, yeah.
So what is your estimate of, I'm sorry.
Go right ahead, you're next.
For the home and property owner versus the demolition, is the demolition
$20,000
roughly?
We did $15,000 for demolition for an estimate and about $100,000 for, like I said, it's been about 4 years, but we did 21 houses in Elbow Bend, and that's about what we saw, so.
And the properties are very small lots.
They are. I think we're very conservative.
But I mean, how big are the lots, roughly?
They're all different out there. And if we go, I mean,
some are
huge.
Some are an acre, but they're.
Some are 35 by.
Yeah.
50.
So they're
you know,
per square foot cost might be pretty high, is my point.
That includes apparent structures as well, so.
Director Thompson?
You did the math for $125,000 per property?
Divided by 5.6 million divided by 45 is 125,000.
Outrageous. In those properties, no one of them are worth maybe 25,000. And you're saying that the fees.
Again, that's an average, and there are some very lovely homes down there.
But they're among the 45.
Yeah, you know.
They're lovely. Why would they want to buy out?
Because they can't rebuild.
And probably more than the 45 have been condemned by the city anyway.
A number of them have. I don't know exactly how many, but yeah, I heard about 90% were damaged over 50%.
So the 40, yeah. And of the 45, what percentage is that of those?
Oh, I don't know. I'm guessing everyone who, if you sent us a form, you probably cannot rebuild. And maybe that's not true, but it's likely that they couldn't if they.
Well, that includes all your asbestos potential or remediation, any other things like that as well. I mean, they've built in that into their budget as well. So that all has to be handled according to the NEPA rules and DEQ.
A lot of money.
It is. Yep. So
the one thing too, they have to pay. All they have to pay pre.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, the homeowner's not going to get $125,000. That is for the whole, everything that for that property.
Vivian, Director Bradley, and then Director Spinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you said approached a city. That also cost share on the buyout for King Lake. Which city was that?
The city of Omaha has jurisdiction over almost all of King Lake. And when they annexed Elkhorn is when that happened. The county still provides like the emergency services and roads and evacuation. You know, they're.
Which, do we know, city council member represents King Lake?
I think the Brinker Harding.
Director Spinski.
So, did I hear you correct? We have to maintain these properties as well going forward?
On this.
Park staff, or we have to contract out to mow these?
And that's historically been an issue here. We have these kind of scattered properties that we purchased in King Lake. Now, when we get to the other Village Burlington and the Sarpy County, we have some different arrangements. In this particular arrangement, if we purchase it, and the way the program works, a governmental entity has to maintain this property as open space in perpetuity, and if no one else will do it, it's ours. So we try to find other people, but at King Lake, it's our responsibility.
We got... Director
Teaser again, and then Director Yap, and then. Just comment that there are some homeowners out there that have been, you know, assisting in cutting some of the NRD lots out there, thankfully, and actually doing a pretty nice job. You know, trying to keep, they have adjoining property, and they're thinking upon themselves at the moment.
They do, and they've actually been pretty vocal about wanting and being willing to do it, so it's not. Not as bad of a deal as it could be. I mean, they've been participating.
Director Japanin, Director Bailey.
Did you say the city of Omaha has jurisdiction over Kings Lake?
Extraterritorial jurisdiction, which means it's in their zoning jurisdiction for permits.
They could be the sponsoring government entity and not.
They are not interested in buyouts at King Lake.
They do buyouts anywhere else?
I have not known them to.
Yeah. They provide most of the services there.
But we would, ultimately, it sounds like we would have these properties in perpetuity forever and ever, and we just keep accumulating more properties that we can do absolutely nothing with.
Governmental agency. And you know, now a lot of the residents there have long since that there's thought that there's this plan to gather all the lots and have a park. You know, there is no plan like that, but that could be a plan.
It's a good idea.
Because it floods so often. You know, there's so you can do some things on it. The uses are pretty.
Buy all the properties. Now it's turned to rivery and have.
Properties are still there. There's
well, that's the thing. Right. There's a lot of land. So we're a long ways away there. Yeah, no doubt. Overall, that is what we've done.
Director Bagley?
Back to your comment on the city of Omaha. I know their inspectors go up there and they tagged all the house up there because when OPBD was going to turn power back on, they worked with the city inspectors. So just, I guess you made it clear in the discussion you had with the other directors. The city wants no part, although they have jurisdiction over King Lake, they want no part of any funding or anything to help us. Now, what about the Douglas County Board? That meeting you guys had out in Valley there, John?
Yeah, they have not expressed interest.
Commissioner Borgeson, yeah. Nothing. Huh?
Commissioner Borgeson did not express interest financially participate, although they would like to see the properties bought out, but they didn't have any interest in helping.
I think
certainly
that's been the sentiment, I believe.
That's been the sentiment for a while.
Okay.
Rick, if I may, sorry, I apologize for dragging this out, but the mitigating factors or costs, is there an estimate of those, you know, 45 properties, I can't imagine it
well,
positive like the Corps of Engineers require, but.
So, yeah, they, and that's in the beginning of the memo, and Lori's done a lot of work on this over the years of, you know, how much money can you expect on a return from something like that? And there's a number of publications that have that, and she's seeing here $7 for every dollar spent. But there, when we, after the 2010 flood, we did spend some time trying to work with Douglas County Emergency Management. I'm like, what did you spend evacuating people and keeping people out of the area? And it was astronomical, and the county board was still not interested. But, I mean, in general, it's a good thing.
So if there's 20 people there versus 200, it's still the same.
That is true. There is still some cost. There's federal dollars saved for not paying flood insurance and flood assistance, you know, assistance to flood and all of that, but yes, yeah, large number of residents.
7 to 1.
That's conservative. Mm. Actually,
you're the best. You're, better than my 401k.
Yeah, your return on investment's 82%.
No, not my taxpayers, because they're still paying the other part.
Well, your loss avoidance.
Director Bradley?
Yes, loss avoidance. Good.
Yeah.
Director Bradley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, a little history lesson now. In 2011, buyout of ISKE and the other place, if I remember, Bellevue City Council had somewhat of a battle, but they eventually came in. Wasn't the Army Corps of Engineers the other partner, or was it Sarpy County?
Sarpy County, and the other thing, we had an NET grant to pay for part of that as well.
I think the power of the people, though, I think they were sort of pressing Bellevue City Council and so forth, so power of the people in this case, what have you, somewhat socioeconomically disadvantaged. They might not think they have a voice, but they're going to have to find it. Pressure the city of Omaha and the county of Douglas to come aboard and help pay for some of this.
That's what just directed at.
Okay, just jumping the gun a little bit, just reading ahead, you know, like the city of Arlington, are they cost, you're going to talk about this later, but they're going to cost share with us, correct? At least half of the cost of this. So they're participating in their own buyout. And so is Bellevue, it looks like. But nobody's helping us with this one.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Sheriff Person?
Aye. Okay, so the Sarpy County is the next set of buyouts. And Bill, there should be a map. It's on the others. Okay, so same grant program, same process, all of that. Different setup. This one's a little smaller. This is 7 properties that have expressed interest. Here's the blow up. 6 of them are in Elbow Bend, just south of there. We bought, I think, 3 and two or three. Now I can't remember. I can't believe I don't remember. But 2 or 3 in Elbow Bend after 2011, and then we bought the other 19 or so from just south of there. And these were some folks that we really did not think we would ever see expressing an interest in a buyout, and it was. And that tells you the toll that 2 big floods will take on some people. So we got 6 letters of interest from the folks at Elbow Bend, and I believe that only leaves 2 structures out there. If these all were to be purchased, that would leave only 2 structures on the riverside of a levee. So that's that situation. And Bellevue did cost share with us on the purchase of Elbow Bend and Iski last time, and they did agree to take to their council an interlocal agreement that would cost share on the local part. So there's 75% federal, 25% of these 6 would be split between the district and Bellevue. And there's one other, let's see. Here it is in Sarpy County. This one is a woman that has expressed interest in us buying her cabin. It's on the riverside of the levee of the Western Sarpy Clear Creek levee there, and it sustained a lot of damage. This one does not have, it's not in Bellevue's jurisdiction, and it does not have someone to cost share on it. It makes Martin and Bill's life a lot easier because want to give them the opportunity to be included in the application. So on this one, what you'll see, we use the same numbers, an average cost for the structure, the demolition, asbestos, and appraisal. And we came up with a project of $875,000. And then the split will be a little funny because it's still total of that $875,000, 75% is federal, but then Bellevue would only pay their, I guess, 12.5% on these 6, and this 25% would be all NRD. So then that would leave Bellevue 90. This is all approximate. And again, this is voluntary right up till closing. And the district would have about $125,000 contribution for these structures.
Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Stupinski?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Aye. Thank you. Now we've got one more.
One more. This is the Village of Arlington. And if you recall, we are working with the village on, it's a different grant program, but still through FEMA, on a buyout of 2 structures that have flooded a number of times historically. So we have that going on, and this is some additional properties that flooded in Arlington. So they had 5 that the council chair and the city clerk have asked us to include in an application. They have 5 properties. The village board is not entirely sure that they want to purchase all 5, but they would like the opportunity to have all 5 in the application. And those are shown with these blue dots. There's 3 here and then 2 up here. And if Mary can correct me if I'm wrong, but the other 2 were right along this road that we, mm-hmm. was it right here, that yeah. we purchased yep. through a different grant program earlier. Block. And so in this case, we would split the 25% cost share 50-50 for all 5 of those structures should they be purchased. And additionally, the Village of Arlington would take ownership of those lots in the long term. We would file the application, administer the grant, and follow through closing, and then turn those lots over to the village. Those are the details of this agreement.
Okay. have a motion?
So moved.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors.
The program we used previously with FEMA. Why can't we use that program to buy these out?
Different program, and it's you can.
It is the same.
Oh, it's.
It's still the same rule, and that's something I guess I should have thrown in at the beginning. If they're repetitive loss or severe repetitive loss, they get a higher cost share from FEMA. So based on their historical damages, they may be eligible for up to 90% or 100% cost cover. So at this point, we won't know that until.
Yeah, that they kind of keep those numbers close because you don't want everyone knowing that people have gotten a lot of insurance claims.
We don't want you to know.
So it's based on how many times insurance claims have been paid out and whether or not they're on this list that has been.
The city of Arlington is willing to split the cost with us, you're saying, correct?
Any other comments from directors? Roll call.
Deezer?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes. That completes PPO. Thank you.
The time is 7:35. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order with that. Notification that the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back and in the back hallway. Moving on to Corn Crawl.
Bradley.
Here.
Bradley.
Here.
Here.
Conley.
Here.
And Jefferson.
Here. Adoption agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Bradley.
Yes.
McCormick.
Yes.
Aye.
Begley?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication. Moving on to item six, review the recommendation of refinancing 2015 and 17 flood control and water quality enhancement bonds. John Winkler, Paul Greider, G.A. Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The NRD issued $43.5 million of flood protection and water quality enhancement refunding bonds on June 15th of 2017. Which saved the district more than $2.7 million. At that time, there were certain bonds that were left unrefunded. The bonds were refinanced on January 5th, 2018, saving the district an additional $290,000. And then the district refinanced its 2010 bonds in 2015 to achieve approximately $460,000 of interest cost savings. To date, these refinancing actions have saved the district taxpayers $3.5 million. Recently, interest rates have declined further. At this time, refinancing of outstanding maturities of the 2015 and 17 bonds is expected to save the district approximately $1.5 million in additional savings. So if taken together, it's going to be nearly $5 million of savings to the district taxpayers. Paul Greger from D.A. Davidson is here to go over. The refinancing does not change the term or any of the conditions. It's simply as the other actions, the bonds will mature at the same date, and however, we can save some significant money. Paul, if you'd like to come up and answer any questions or provide any additional information.
Thank you. Good evening.
Paul Greger with D.A. Davidson, and my partner Andy Forney also with Davidson.
Good evening.
Mr. Winkler covered the highlights. We are looking at, if the board's interested, potentially refinancing part of the remaining 2015 and 2017 bonds. The interest rate on those bonds right now is a little over 4%, and if the market cooperates, we think we'll be somewhere in the mid-2s. So that's where that projected $1.5 million of interest cost savings is coming from.
Bless you.
There was a provision in the tax code back in 2018 that caused tax-exempt bonds to no longer be allowed to be used for advanced refunding, which means we're paying off bonds before they would otherwise become callable. So these bonds would indeed be taxable. The spread between taxable interest rates and tax-exempt interest rates is rather tight, so this is a advantageous. By taxable, I mean the owners of the bonds would be subject to taxes on the interest paid to them.
I'd move staff recommendation.
Second?
Second.
Questions?
So is that net of fees, and what are the fees associated with that?
Yeah, net of fees, we're projecting at least $1.5 million right now. And total issuance costs are in the over $400,000. I can give you a breakout line item of that. We're anticipating legal fees of $50,000, rating agency fees of $27,000, and underwriting fees of about $350,000, which represents approximately 1% of the.
Public comment, I am going to restrict you 3 minutes. Sean, do you wish to speak?
Yes, thank you. I just had a couple.
Sean Lotz, 10404 North 132nd Street. A couple of questions I would have is, what is the expected date for this refinancing to occur? And if it does, will the principal and interest payments change? And if they do, will you modify the budget? Those are
Paul,
my
can you answer
questions.
When
so
we're not extending the final maturity, as Mr. Winkler said. The payment dates will all remain the same.
And the amounts as well?
The amounts would come down in a fiscal year basis. We're seeing six-figure savings in every fiscal year period, beginning fiscal year, ending June 30, 2020. So we're not really making any changes to the structure. We're just swapping out the higher interest rates with newer ones.
So the P&I will drop.
But it won't be reflected in this. I mean, when will they be issued as far as the new?
We would timing. We would expect them to be issued. We're expecting to go to market likely mid-September. And then the date of issuance would be towards the end of the month as we can.
That would be past the time the budget is adopted in September and sent to the state. So they would have to make that modification in the next budget cycle.
But you can amend budgets with the state, correct?
Yeah, you can, but as long as it won't change the bottom dollar, as long as we don't exceed that bottom dollar, we won't amend it until we get the payment schedule and until we find out exactly. It may be modified in the future fiscal year, but we'll have to see what it comes back at.
If you're refinancing, say, $30 million of bonds, you've got $30 million coming in and $30 million going out. So that
I understand that, but it's more.
Yeah, it won't be done in time to know to change your budget because the budget's due to the state September 30th.
And the costs will all wrap up into the new bond,
right,
so
right.
They're factored into the new principal and interest
right.
rate.
Right.
Okay.
Any further questions?
So if you go to market and you don't come with the $1.5 million savings because rates are higher, or whatever, is that reflected in the fees, or do the fees remain the same no matter what? Do we still save $1.5 million, or do we?
Great. Let me do my best to answer that. So based on the interest rates we're seeing right now, we think it's $1.5 million. I will tell you this. I put these numbers together before we saw further decline in the markets. So I'm being conservative, I believe, in my presentation. I would expect that number to be probably higher. But I also don't know what's going to happen, you know, towards the end of August or beginning of September. So I decided to stick with the number that I originally presented, Mr. Winkler, just to be conservative. But if we get to a spot where it's time to sell bonds, you're under no commitment to us unless we sell bonds and the deal closes. There's no fees to Davidson or Barrett Holm unless the transaction closes successfully. So as we get closer to the time to sell the bonds, we call Mr. Winkler and say, okay, savings is, it's come down a little bit, it's 1.4, it's up a little bit, it's 1.8. We still think it makes sense to do. We go ahead, we do that, and then we sign a bond purchase agreement. If I come back to Mr. Winkler and the savings is, you know, on something this size, if the savings, you know, is down $200,000-$300,000, we're going to agree to wait, and we're going to see if market conditions improve, or maybe we just do nothing. Maybe we just tried and it didn't work. But all this resolution that we're going to ask the board to consider does is it sets parameters and it sets the stage for the NRD to refinance the bonds if by the time we get all of our work done, the market conditions are still favorable.
The fees aren't 1%. They stay the same no matter what the
fees
savings
are. It's not typical. We don't make more if you save more or make less if you save less. It's our incentive needs to, our salesmen get paid to sell the bonds. And our trading desk views the NRD as its customer. So our job is to get the very best rate we can for the borrower, being the NRD. And there's lots of different institutions that'll buy these bonds. So our folks get paid to sell those bonds to those institutions. But we'll have market comps. I showed Mr. Winkler what else was done in the market. We expect you to receive a AA- rating from Standard & Poor's, which is an excellent investment grade rating. So it's my expectation that we'll have very little trouble selling the bonds. I'll have a better idea tomorrow where I'm kind of doing the same presentation for Grand Island Public Schools, for example. We're going to market tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock with a $50 million taxable advance refunding for the exact same purposes that you're doing. Their rating is AA-. We have very good interest from the institutions out there because there's been a lack of supply of that type of product. So I'm expecting a very favorable sale tomorrow for that client. When we went to their board and had a very similar conversation maybe 4 weeks ago, I told them I think we'd save $2.5 million. My indications as of late this afternoon are about $4 million. So that's not scalable here in this case, but we've just seen the taxable rates decline, and we're feeling pretty good about what we're going to do for that school district. Therefore, if things continue to cooperate, I think we're going to bring a good deal to you.
And the reset of the Fed rate, does that affect your yield?
As the market prices in the idea of lower interest rates, that only helps the transaction.
Thank you, Chairperson Teaser. I think you may have already answered this, but my first question is, how fast can you lock once you have approval? And then secondly, with a favorable rate decline environment, is this the right time to do it? I assume you watched the 10-year or something like that, and it's come down dramatically.
Yeah,
I see that.
Absolutely. What we do is we look at, we're in the markets. We can make the comment about catching the falling knife, right? We brought this to Mr. Winkler saying it meets or exceeds the tests that we like to put on these things. The Government Finance Officers Association says when you figure out what the present value savings is of that savings over the life of the bond issue, they like that threshold to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 4%. You're right there, maybe a little bit better. So if we wait, obviously if we wait and interest rates continue to decline, then the district saves more money. I don't know what's going to happen. It looks like a good deal. $1.5 million to me was a good number to show Mr. Winkler, and that's why we're here this evening. Board felt like there was a number other than $1.5 million that should be a target savings figure. We would be happy to call that a minimum threshold of savings.
Is 1% pretty typical on a refi?
Yeah.
Director Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, a vote yes is you want to save the district and taxpayers $1.5 million. A vote no is you're not interested in saving $1.5 million. Is that correct?
Good point.
All right, thank you. And by the way, go to OPS, Omaha Public Schools, and do the same thing. That's where most of my tax dollars go. Probably not your account. That's a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer that.
We have other customers.
Did you come to us or did we come to you?
I showed it to Mr. Winkler.
So you initiated this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and what was the taxable, it was taxable before, and they're going to be refinanced as a taxable? They were tax-free before, and now they'll be a taxable?
The bonds were previously tax-exempt, and at the moment, the district is paying just over 4% on that money.
Right, and so you think they're going to come out at what then? 2.5?
A little under 2. I think I was at...
Taxable 2% for how many years?
Final maturity is 2031. I'll tell you kind of what we're looking at. We're looking at...
Do you tie up your money for less than 2%?
Well, institutions that kind of have to plug their nose and buy these things is what's happening here. So we've got, we're anticipating bonds to price, and this is when I ran this, you know, it's been a little bit, a week or two ago, but 1.99% is the rate we see on a 2020. And that buyer's going to pay, they're going to pay tax on the interest income.
Less than 2%.
And if I go all the way out to the final maturity of 2031, we think we can get that done under 3%. I'm showing a 2.96 as of my last market indication. They're going to pay taxes on that interest income the whole ride. And that's where we think these things are going to go.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
The total amount of the bond is still 43 or near?
So this we're anticipating this bond to be no more than $35 million.
And so a vote against this would be not to save the $1 million versus wait to see if something was better.
Yeah, a vote no would be to either abandon this idea or come back to you in 6 months and give you a different update. So we're here for you long term, whatever you want to do.
And you need 8 votes on Thursday to pass the right resolution, according to the statutes.
Further questions? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Begley?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thanks everybody.
Thanks. Item 7, review and recommendation of FY 2020 budget, draft 2, John Winkler. You're on.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This budget year has been challenging, to say the least, with the flooding that occurred. I've got some charts that we'll go over here. I'm going to pass those down to Danny. Thank you. Make sure I have enough. Okay. So attached to your agenda is the draft 2 of the budget for fiscal year 2020. The changes from draft 1 are highlighted in yellow. Once again, a 4.5% estimated increase in valuation is calculated to the tax levy. Final valuations are not available until mid-August, and last year's increase was 5.19%. $500,000 budgeted for necessary cash reserve, that's $200,000 less than last year. And I'll go over total budget cuts that were made to remain within the current mill levy of 0.037594. Dates to remember, public input meeting is Thursday, August 8th, 2019 at the board meeting, and the budget hearings and adoption for fiscal year 2020 budget, and to set the tax levy for the fiscal year 2020 is September 12th at the 2019 board meeting there. The changes highlighted from the last budget are on pages, let me get my sheet here. Pages 14, there is one on page 3, excuse me, and that is just a cash at the county treasurer, and that's just an update from the county treasurer's office. So page 14 in yellow, this is maintenance channels and levies, you can see in yellow. So we got an estimate from the Corps of Engineers to do some post-flood repairs on the Papillion Creek levees, and that added about $1.8 million to the budget. So we had to make corresponding cuts to keep that within the mill levy that we had in draft 1, and you can see the changes there in yellow from that draft 1 budget. Page 19. Water quality programs, again, this is just some updated information. We either got some updated numbers or a new estimate or some better quality numbers as far as what those exact expenditures may be. Page 24, again, more update to the numbers, the Platte River Landing Recreation Area. I believe we actually had a bid to draw those off of. As well as what we could expect to receive back from FEMA funding. Go to page 34. Again, that was a reduction in the watershed fund, WP4 regional tension structure, to make up for the difference of the 1.8
million that we need to come up for the Pinyon Creek levee system. And then page 45 and 46, these are just updated numbers to the Pinyon Creek Watershed Partnership and the South Sarpy Watershed Partnership. So it's updated, some updated membership dues and updated operating reserves for those two accounts. I included also the 2019-20 budget fact sheet. I'd like to include the population of the NRD. We have over 805,000 citizens, over 42% state's population in our district. So we have the most citizens that we are responsible for from any political subdivision except for the state of Nebraska. Our proposed property tax levy is 0.0375, and a property valued at $100,000 would pay $37.50 a year, or $3.12 a month. Property valued at $150,000 would pay $56.25 a year, or $4.68 a month. I did some property tax levy comparisons, which we do every year. Douglas County up 1.5 to 29.5. Washington County 31. Sarpy County 29. Dakota County 33. Omaha, if you read, they kept their mill levy the same, or proposed at 47 cents per hundred. Bennington's at 77 cents. Bellevue's at 61. Jim mentioned OPS. They're at $1.24 per hundred. Bennington Public Schools is $1.43. Fort Calhoun's at $1.31. Metro Community College gets 9 cents per hundred. So they get quite a bit more than us. And I did look at some fire districts, Papillion, the city of Papillion, they're static as well, 45 cents. There was an article today in the paper, they're going to keep their mill levy the same as last year. Millard Fire District gets 13 cents per hundred. Valley Rural gets 8 cents. And Bennington Rural gets 5 cents. So I looked at Sarpy County and Douglas County, and I have a list of the comparisons of the tax rates. We are right above ESUs, and they get 1.5 cents. So we get maybe a little bit. We get double what they do. And so everybody else, obviously, is way exceeds ours. I gave you a historical a look at our budget requirements and our levy. So again, this would be the 14th out of 15th year that we've kept our mill levy the same or lower. And I also gave you an idea of when the bonding authority was established in 2009, and then the total budget requirements are also listed on that. Property tax revenue distribution in the NRD, 90% of property tax revenue is generated in Sarpy and Douglas, and 10% is generated in Burt, Dakota, Thurston, and Washington. We are proposing $1,117,026 in additional revenue than last fiscal year. And again, that's a 4.5% increase with our estimate of the overall valuation increases. And I gave just a little expenditure or a little explanation of the budget figures and what we're dealing with this fiscal year. Obviously, the flood had a significant impact. But if you look at this, what I handed out, it kind of breaks down. You know, this year our budget's about $12 million or $11 million more than what it was last year. But if you look at the numbers, what's generating that additional total budget is about 95% of it is outside revenue or additional revenue. Federal grants is 10%. State grants is 70%. Fees and assessments are 12.3% of that 100. Interest income is 1.12, so we've actually increased our interest income about 700% from last fiscal year. And then also miscellaneous and other income, which I didn't even include in that, would make it about 95%. So 95% of our total budget is being generated by additional revenue. And that's paying for like the Missouri River Levy and WP 6 and 7 and those Water Sustainability Fund grants. Also increases in rents, increases in camping fees, all those things were generating additional revenue. So that has to be reflected according to state law. Whatever you bring in revenue has to be reflected in expenses to balance your budget. So again, it's not property taxes that's driving this. It's bringing in that additional, what the staff does a tremendous job of doing, is bringing in that additional revenue. If it's cost shares, if it's state money, if it's federal money, or whatever, interest. I mean, it don't seem significant, but when you can increase your interest income by 700%, you did something right that fiscal year. Now, not say it's going to occur 700% every year. And we just had a presentation where we're going to be dropping our bond payments. So we're trying to do all the right things to generate that type of income in those expenses.
Also, we have $4.5 million in unreimbursed, absorbed, post-flood repair costs. That's $4.5 million that's, either that's taken out of this budget that we have nothing to fill that in except for we either increase revenue or we take it from other projects and programs. So we've made over $6 million in cuts from the first draft that we've gotten together to get to the point where we have the same mill property tax mill levy. And so we're cutting from the cash reserve. We're cutting from, we're taking Pigeon Jones 12. We're cutting that. We're cutting our cap budget. We're cutting Glacier Creek. We're cutting a lot of other expenses in just our bank and trust fees, attorney fees. We're taking $2.5 million out of the watershed fund. So what that means is that's $2.5 million less that we have to build the reservoirs, which continues to push us further behind the eight ball. So this has been an extremely difficult year because we have $4.5 million that is just vaporized. And we had $700,000 in cash reserve. And I think this doesn't show us what a cash reserve would do. If you have an adequate cash reserve, like the state has, the state cash reserve, if you have a particular situation like the flood event, and you had a decent reserve, then you could utilize that instead of cutting into your other projects and programs to a higher degree. So that's what I think is a good idea of what the cash reserve would do, because everybody says, well, what's the cash reserve for? Well, it's for specific instances like that. And so as staff-wise, we did what we could to meet the commitments that this board has entered into. That's interlocal agreements, that's cost shares that you approved, and that's also to continue the mission of those 12 things behind us that we are supposed to continue to do statutorily, and also to honor, to try to keep that mill levy at least static. And so that's what this budget reflects. And when I say it's a minimum of operations, it is literally a minimum of operations. And I don't know if we've had this minimum before, because we're not keeping up with what we are supposed to do. So we're cutting to meet that mill levy and to try to continue to be good stewards of the taxpayer funds. But we're doing everything we can to continue the project, continue the programs, and continue to what we're supposed to do. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and if you'd like to go over anything specific, that would be fine as well. So I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any public comment?
Need a motion?
You need a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
All right. We have staff recommendation. Thank you, Larry.
Sean Malotz, 10404 North 132nd Street, Omaha. I'm just reiterating my email that I had sent to you, Mr. Winkler, for response.
I did respond.
I did one Monday.
You did one Monday?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
That's why I brought it tonight, because usually you respond, and I thought I'd bring it in writing. I didn't know if there's a new rule that I have to bring it in writing to the meeting, that's what I brought. All I would like to do is thank you for your response, by the way. I'd like to just get a little more clarification on a couple of the items, so I'm going to just give this to you tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Also, if I could get a copy of what you presented to the board, as well as I can get it.
I got it.
As well as an update on the flood-related expenses that you'd sent. So, thank you.
Okay, no, thank you.
Any comments or questions? Mr. Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You had mentioned an increase in camping fees.
Mm-hmm.
Does the board have to approve that, or?
No, that was just it was a camping fee. It was camping fees and the contractors that tuber vendors
contractors. We've made
that they're paying a fee to utilize.
Okay, I remember that.
And I believe it's in the rules that we put it in. So yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Further questions? Comments?
I had a question.
Go ahead.
You mentioned $2.5 million out of the watershed fund. What exactly are you talking about taking money out of that?
So we have $6 million we have been shooting for $6 million to put in that fund to continue to fund those projects. Well, obviously, with this
budget, the situation we were in, we could not do that. So we had to remove, it was $2,588,500. We had to cut from that attempt to get to that level. And that level is based off of the watershed, the partnership, and the economics that was done for that. And so once you start cutting from that, then your whole economic outlook is out the window. And so you're actually now, by doing that, we're just moving things further and further into the future to try to build. So we're not I wouldn't say we're not living up to it, but we're not putting enough resources in there to keep that timeline that was in the partnership agreement and that we discussed when you guys approved it. So that's the issue.
Yes, it just sets us back a year because of funding event.
For
next year, we'll be back in there and we'll continue to build the structures.
Well, and you know, we're supposed to get 1.79 back from FEMA, but we don't know when we're going to get that. It could be 3 years from now. And so we can't count on that. You know, that could continue to be a hole next year because we expected it back. We don't have it. Now we're at $1.7 million in the hole.
I just wanted to say a general comment that I want to commend staff, all you staff members, and producing it. Year after year, it's amazing how we can function as well. I mean, I always want to get more money to build these structures to save future flooding events. But obviously we can't. We're limited by law for our mill levy. But great job on doing the budget and analyzing. This is a six-month process. We're getting close, so thank you, staff, for all the hard work you've done.
And the political reality.
I'll say yes, sir. Cause
yes, sir. But I say the political reality is, if you look at all of the, not all of them, but typically most government bodies are keeping their mill levy the same, and they're basically banking on what the assessor is going to give them to cover inflation and all those costs. Lower Platte South, one of basically closest peer, NRD, they static mill levy, they're taking what the assessor gives them. Not very many folks are interested in raising the mill levy. I sit on the school board. Last thing in the world we want to do is raise the mill levy. But what do we have to get our revenue from? We either have to get it from the legislature or from our property taxpayers. We have very little choice. It's either property taxes, or we have to go flip over every couch and look under every cushion to try to find money to do these things. We have very little ability or no ability to do anything but take what the assessor gives us and cut costs and look for money here, look for money there, and hope we get grants and we get cost shares and all those things. So we're not doing anything that any other governmental entity isn't doing. And we're doing it actually better and longer. 14 out of 15 years, you guys haven't adjusted the mill levy? You know, and Douglas County, perfect, because they went up a penny and a half, and I know what they're doing. They have to build the juvenile justice center. I mean, that's their plan. But a 1.5, that's 40% of what we're even able to tax. And so it's mind-boggling, especially in a rural fire district that has more taxing authority than you do. And you've got 42% of the state's population. So that's what we're dealing with. And that's what makes it hard. It makes it difficult.
And we have no black holes.
I haven't found them in the budget yet.
Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Yes. Thank you. Next item. Item 8, review recommendations, Zelensky Basin 2, three-stage SID trail crossing easement attachment. Again, Amanda, good evening.
Good evening. Bill, can you go to the map? This will be a quick one. So when we, in February of last year, we purchased, keep going, there should be a colored one behind that. Thank you. When we purchased this property for the Zerinsky Basin 2 water quality basin from the Blue Sage development, the purchase of this was contingent on an easement to allow them to, on their own costs, build a trail and pedestrian bridge so that they could get these neighborhood kids over to, there's a school over here at Elkhorn School. So we had given them an easement that was all tied together with the land purchase. and it was just kind of a straight, it was this yellow, which is a little hard to see, but it was basically just straight across for them to get the trail. And then after some more time and they got more layouts and houses went in, they came up with a better plan that doesn't have this weird switchback for grades where they would like to bring the trail in from a different location and still cross at the same spot. But it's just this green area is the new easement that they need, and it doesn't impact anything with the project, and it makes it better with grades. So we're recommending that the subcommittee recommend to the board that we do an amendment to that easement. All the same conditions apply where they put things back the way they found them. Just give them a little extra space for the trail.
No cost to anybody. It's just
Is there a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. Is there any comments from the general public? Any further comments from the directors? Hearing none, roll call.
Hedley?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Jefferson?
Yes. Item 9, review the recommendation and approved report of appraisals for the Missouri River R613, R616. I believe we have to go into exec. And could we get a motion, too, please?
Motion, go.
And so second.
You have to give a reason. Don't you have to give a reason?
For discuss pending litigation.
Pending litigation.
Okay. Our motion.
Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen of the audience, we ask you to please exit at this point.
We're back.
Okay, we have a motion to go out of exec. Roll call, please.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Yes.
Motion moves staff recommendation.
Second. I couldn't hear you, I'm sorry.
Motion to staff recommendation.
Okay, you have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion from the general public? Questions? Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Begley?
Yes.
Begley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Yes. That, ladies and gentlemen, concludes our agenda. We stand adjourned. Thank you.
All right.
We have the.
Look
right
here.
That's true.
Waters, it should be last.
Yeah. Fred?
Well, you wait for Larry.
Larry had
a nature break.
Oh.
Called to order the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee request for proposals to provide legislative representation services August 6, 2019. No open meetings law in the back. We'll do a quorum call.
Bradley.
Here.
Minsky.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Jefferson.
Here. Adoption of agenda.
So move.
Motion. Is second?
Second.
Second, roll call.
Minsky.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Jefferson.
Aye. We have proof of publication of tonight's meeting, become part of permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on initial screening proposals for consultants, selection committee, John Winkler.
So we received four proposals, Catalyst, Hush Blackwell, O'Hara Lindsay, and Kissel Cove. And so the ad hoc subcommittees, recommendation if it's two, three, or four. Interviews are August 14th, and we're requesting if we could do two or three.
I'd like to make a motion that we only interview two, and the obvious who those two are, but
Catalyst
and Hush.
There's a motion to interview two, and the two are Catalyst and Hush Blackwell.
Second.
That's the motion.
I second the motion.
Any discussion by other board members on that item? Go right ahead.
Why? You said it's really obvious. I guess I don't know any of them, but why is it really obvious? Two of them.
Where you say that?
Well, I'm just asking. What is it? He's a tough guy. I'm just curious.
He knew you know.
It's really obvious, and that's why I'm wondering why it's really obvious.
I can't answer his question. I was just going to. Can I make a. I know who my top two were, and one of them wasn't Catalyst. I had a Hush Blackwell and O'Hara Lindsay.
Someone wants to answer.
Did you answer Ted's question? I just was curious. You'd mentioned it seemed obvious that they were the top two, and I was just curious obvious about it.
Some of this goes back to my NARD days with one of the lobbyists who was an NARD executive. And he decided to part ways. I'm not wishing to name names, but just things didn't go well, so I eliminated him. And the other, besides not knowing and the price, it was.
Okay. Mr. Thompson?
If I may spin off on that a bit. Stu on Lindsay. Look at that client list from Lindsay. And I looked at that, and plus the highest price. I don't think they have time for us. I know John Lindsay when he was state senator, my state senator, back in how many years ago. Nice guy, I like him. But if you look at their client list, my gosh, that's quite a load. And that was a non-obvious, an obvious non-pick, I should say. Does that help out, Director Jeff?
Director Bagley?
So is this based on, you guys did the interviews, is it based on?
Okay,
so this is just based on their resumes, proposals?
Yeah.
Nothing else?
Nothing.
No price given or nothing?
No, there's price.
There is? So there's a price given by all four?
Yeah. Yep.
So if I can ask, what were the ones that you're recommending rank as far as cost goes out of the four?
One second.
Middle, yeah.
They were the middle?
Mm-hmm.
So Lindsay was the highest? Is that right? Okay, so then the two you recommended are two and three?
Yeah.
Okay. And resources-wise, I guess we'll find that out Thursday, right?
Right.
Okay. No?
Resources-wise.
Like, what they bring to the table as far as their firms.
We'll find that out during the interview.
You find that out during the interview.
That's right. That's exactly the right hander out of the bullpen, right. And the left hander. Okay, right. That's what we'll find out. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
So with the report or the proposals are not going to be shared with the rest of the board?
If they can,
I'd like to see one.
Yeah, I'd like to see
vote. Sure.
I understand the vote.
Yeah, before Thursday's meeting.
So probably in prior to a meeting would have been, at least if there's any comment, even though it is an ad hoc committee, from a board member would be better to be informed prior to the meeting with anything brought before the board.
Brett Dispensi.
Thank you, Chairperson Conley. The way I see it, Hush is $5,000 a month. Catalyst is $3,500. Kissel is $2,850. And Lindsay's $4,250. So somebody said they're the highest. Lindsay's not the highest. Hush is the highest.
If you look at Lindsay, they're going to add on other factors.
A little bit of per diem here and there. I saw that.
Per diem and all that. That shot it up.
Yeah, but you don't.
Okay.
All
right.
You've got a motion on the floor. Any further discussion by the committee? Roll call.
Motion before.
For two.
Two.
Alphabetical order.
Yes. Thompson.
Yes.
Bradley.
No.
Yes.
Aye. And we adjourn.